All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. And we're here till 5 o'clock. Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5 and the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. Triple Play Thursday, a one artist, three songs. Get your requests in now, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. You can also check us out on Twitter at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Nick D Show. All right. Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. He joins us biweekly to talk about everything TV related. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And it's that time again for a visit with Dan Feinberg. So let's welcome Dan to the show. Dan, welcome back.
Thank you much, Nick.
How you doing?
Oh, ever so busy. How about you?
Not bad. Not bad. Let's start out with I did indeed watch all of Stranger Things. And
what'd you think?
I thought it was great. I thought it was fun. You know, I'm like you. I don't think it's the greatest show ever, and I'm not quite as, you know, enamored with it as many people are. But it's very entertaining, and they did a really nice job. And I really, really, really enjoyed the addition of Sean Astin to the show. I thought he was wonderful on it. And they took it to new places, and it stayed true to the tone of the first season. Overall, very, very good. Not, you know, just a terrific, very entertaining season.
It's a show that knows very well what the cast is and who works with the cast. So Sean Astin was great. I thought that Paul Reiser was very good. I thought that the two new young additions were both very good as well.
I agree. I agree entirely. Yeah. No, I mean, it's got, you know, it's firing on all cylinders, you know, on the Duffer Brothers. You know, they've got it down pat. This is the show that they're going to do. And it was consistently as good as the first season. And like you said, the addition of the cast members, the new cast members, really works well. And the kids themselves, you know, the returning cast members, they're all so good, you know. And it's a fun show, you know. And there's, you know, you can and again, you know, spotting all the references and homages and stuff is fun. And it was a nice ride. It took me I watched it a little bit longer than normal. To watch it, I mean,
does that mean 2 days?
No, it was like 4 days. I took a break from it, and then I went in, and because of your recommendation, I started watching Mindhunter.
Okay,
tell everybody about Mindhunter. Boy, what a! I haven't watched the whole thing, but man, so far, wow.
Mindhunter is set in the 1970s, and it is the story of the birth of the FBI's behavioral science unit and sort of the moment at which the FBI kind of stepped out of its sort of simplistic killers are, you know, psychos who we can't understand and we can't learn anything from mentality, and began to actually kind of profile and to figure out what made these people tick. And so it's sort of fundamentally the story of these two agents who begin interviewing behind bars serial killers, and they don't even have a word for it as the series begins. They don't have a name for what these people are who have killed multiple people for reasons that they don't understand. And through the course of interviewing them, they go down these dark spirals, and Anna Torv from Fringe joins them as well to make it kind of an intellectual threesome. And it's just really dark, really moody. It's kind of slow and methodical, which some people don't like, but which I dig. The first two and the last two episodes were directed by David Fincher, who, you know, people may have heard of. And I think it's just a really good, satisfying show. And I genuinely don't ever find myself binging Netflix shows, because for the most part I don't have to, because for the most part I'm reviewing them ahead of time, and so I binge them in a different kind of way. But that's one where I did watch it all in 3 days, and, you know, it was too good not to just keep watching.
Yeah, it's terrific. It really is. And why am I blanking on the lead's name from Hamilton?
Jonathan Groff,
yeah,
is one of the leads. He is indeed from Looking or Hamilton, yeah, or any number of things in which Jonathan Groff randomly pops up.
Right.
He's very, very talented. And the other lead is Hoyt McElhaney, who a few people will know from the short-lived FX series Lights Out, which is one of the very, very rare FX shows that lasted only one season, which is a true pity, because it was a really good
drama about a boxer at the end of his career dealing with the vicissitudes of life as a beaten down boxer. And Hoyt McElhinney was great in that. And he's a very peculiar kind of actor.
Yeah.
He doesn't look and sound like a quote unquote leading man.
Yeah.
But if you find the right leading man role for him, he's great.
Yeah. No, he's terrific too. It's a great show. I'm two episodes in, so I've watched the first two David Fincher episodes, and it's creepy and it kind of grabs you. It really does, and it's terrific. So I took
it makes you kind of go to a dark place.
Yeah.
And it takes you further and further and further. And guess what? It's only going to get darker.
Well, it was interesting because I took a break from Stranger Things to watch that, which was weird. And then I watched those two episodes, and I was like, I think I need to go back to Stranger Things and finish that. So it was, it was very strange to have those
two. Stranger Things is dark as well, but it also has that warmth and that heart to it from the core group and the families that make it feel different from Mindhunter.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I don't know. I mean, I've been looking around and seeing that the numbers, I guess, for Stranger Things were like through the roof, like the weekend that it started streaming, like everybody on the planet watched it.
There were strange Nielsen numbers that they put out that from what I understand, Netflix doesn't want any part of, because frankly, Netflix doesn't want to admit if anyone has figured out what the secret sauce is. And so the idea of Nielsen giving out any numbers for Netflix, sort of violates the way that Netflix would like to do business. But yes, there were numbers that came out that showed, I'm trying to remember what the specific numbers were. There was like that 15 million people watched all of it over the course of 3 days or something. Mm-hmm. It was impressive. It showed you that if the numbers are correct, a show on Netflix really can get a tremendous amount of reach. The question of as to whether anything else on Netflix does comparable numbers to what Stranger Things does, I'm not sure on that. I think probably they have a few other shows that do comparable numbers, obviously, one of which is in the process of going down the tubes, Mr. House of Cards. I think that this is sort of the exception to how Netflix's audience probably usually works. But on the other hand, it was vaguely illustrative of something.
Yeah. Well,
lots of people were watching it.
It's not like they haven't, advertised it. You can't. These kids are on every talk show, everywhere. It's interesting how now the boys have been separated from Millie Bobby Brown in appearances. Last season, it was all of them, including her. And now she's kind of flying solo, and then the boys are doing their thing. And just last night on Corden's show, they did a Motown bit where they came out and sang Motown songs with Corden. They're all over the place. So they really are
all over the place. Millie Bobby Brown did her rap on Fallon last week, but yeah, definitely she's separated herself, and she has her Emmy nomination, so she gets to do that. Right. And the boys seem to all get along well together. And I think that Sadie Sink, who played Max, has been with them on a lot of their promotional appearances.
Yeah.
But, it's a big cast. They really can't all travel together at all times together. So might as well, I guess, split things up a little bit.
Yeah. Every other night on the talk shows they were on. It was just crazy. But anyway, very, very satisfying, very a lot of fun. And if you're a fan of Stranger Things, you've probably already watched it. So that's probably the deal. So, hey, about returning shows, I'd like to talk about a couple. I've been watching, we mentioned Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Still funny as hell, just really strong stuff. I enjoy The Mick. That's a two back-to-back shows that I think have returned and are funny.
Brooklyn Nine-Nine has been so great.
Yes.
Really, I feel like it's been maybe not, a huge leap forward, but I feel like it's been at its best this season.
I agree.
At its best. Yeah. It's a really good show.
I agree. I agree 100%. It's at the height of its strengths right now. It's so funny.
And the Halloween prank episode, which honestly is not one that I enjoy as much as some people do. I'm only occasionally a fan of when shows do the here's our annual dot 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 episode. It's just not something that I enjoy as much as apparently some viewers do. But I thought this year's was both great in general and where it ended was touching and beautiful in its own Brooklyn Nine-Nine way.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's a show that's doing good work.
Yeah. And you are or not a fan of the Mick?
I think the Mick is just so hit and miss. And when it hits, it's very funny. When it misses, it just sort of disappears and slips away, and I rarely feel bothered or offended by it. I'm trying to think of what this week's involved. The science fair and the crossbow, I think those
yes.
things that featured in this week's episode.
Yeah.
And I remember laughing a couple times at it. Caitlin Olsen, as always, is great, and that's she'll keep me watching regardless of whether the miss to hit ratio goes more in the bad direction.
That's how I feel. I like it. I like it a little more than you do, but I love Caitlin Olsen. I just think she's great. I love her in everything she does, obviously on Sunny, and I think, you know, like you said, she's the reason to watch the Mick. I mean, that's it's just if you're a Caitlin Olsen fan, you're going to watch that show, even if it's not a great episode. She's always good on it and always funny.
So. And it is a good comedy block. It's not that many people are watching it, so
right.
there's only so good for Fox, but
yeah.
But it is a good solid comedy block. Though there are bunches of solid comedy blocks. ABC has two or three with Crazy Ex-Girlfriend and Jane the Virgin on Friday nights. The CW has a great hour-long comedy block,
right.
2 hours long, which are just both great shows.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's really lots of good TV, even on network TV.
Yeah, I agree. hang on a second, Dan, okay?
Sure.
All right, Dan Feinberg is with us. He joins us biweekly. He's a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E. And lots and lots of TV to talk about, as always. And we'll jump right back into the conversation after we take a break for the news here on WGN. All right. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower here till 5 a.m. It's Thursday, Triple Play Thursday, one artist, three songs. Get your requests in right now at 312-981-7200. After we talk with finish up our conversation here with Dan Feinberg, we're going to continue to talk about TV. And the topic is going to be shows that really, really outstayed their welcome. Maybe they were even good shows, but they were on for too long and they should have been canceled sooner. And there's a whole mess of them that I have listed, and we're going to talk about them and talk about some of the shows that you think should have been canceled earlier. Now, I'm going to get Dan's thoughts on a couple of those before we get him out of here. And it's Dan Feinberg. He's the TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to talking about some shows that overstayed their welcome because heaven knows there are a bunch.
I know. And I just looked up. I was looking up. I found a piece online about it, and I was like, "Yep, that's a good one. That's a good one. That stayed on too long." I was looking at it. So we'll get. I want to get your thoughts on that as well. Before the break, we were talking about returning shows, and then we have to talk about Better Things. I mean, my God, is that show? It's so good. Pamela Adlon, I don't even know what to say. I just love the show. I think that this season is even better than the first season. And I, you know, the episode with the eulogies, the funeral episode, the eulogy was unbelievable. I mean, all of the episodes have been great, but that one really, really, really hit me hard. And I love everything she does.
Sure.
I mean, I love everything she does.
No, the eulogy episode is going to be kind of the poster boy or girl for what this show can do.
Yeah.
And I think without any question, it is the one that FX is probably going to push for Emmy consideration and all of that. And probably I suspect it will work for that. I thought the following week with the blackout, it wasn't as good as the eulogy episode, but the confrontation with Sam and with Jeff, this sort of family friend who he's been spending a lot of time with this year in his car was hilarious and painful to watch.
Yeah.
And then last week, the stuff at the bar mitzvah and all of the interactions with Sam and her daughter at the bar mitzvah was just it was fantastic.
Yeah.
It was so good. And again, these are just things that this show does with so much confidence at this point. And of course, Pamela Adlon is great. But in the last episode, Hannah Aldygood, who plays Frankie, she's just amazing.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it's impressive to watch. And it's a show that can do all manner of things impressively.
Yeah, it's great, and if people aren't watching it, you should. It's Thursday nights on FX. It's Better Things, and it's great. And I am thrilled that Baskets is coming back. That's finally going to be back in January, and I'm thrilled about that.
I've been really interested in how much they've been promoting it, and I don't know if it just feels to me as if they've been promoting it significantly more and significantly earlier this season.
I think you're right. Yeah, I think so.
Well, I think that's encouraging. Probably the extra Emmy nomination for Zach Galifianakis probably helped, in addition to, the two Louis Anderson nominations and the one win. I think that helped. But yeah, I've been stunned by how frequent the ads have been during all manner of FX stuff this year. So, that's good. Maybe they're sensing something in terms of the streaming and on-demand viewing of the first two seasons. And they're like, okay, this is a show that could actually finally explode in season three. And while I continue not to necessarily believe that's a reasonable possibility, I like the idea.
Mm-hmm.
So, yay. And yes, so that'll be back in January. And heaven knows, as your listeners know, we will talk about it.
Yes, we will, without question. Speaking of shows we talk about all the time, The Good Place. It's just so good. It's just so good. I love it. I absolutely love it. And the creativity on display and where they're taking the show is completely unpredictable, surprising in every level, and everybody is top-notch on it. And that's a show that we talk about a lot, and I think we should, because it's so good.
It is excellent. Unfortunately, now it's going to be on the shelf for a while NBC has football on Thursday nights, which
yeah,
is too bad. It's a great show. Have you watched Superstore at all?
No. You know what? I used to watch it. I haven't watched it. Is it good?
I think it is a really solid show, and I think it's a show that sometimes has really surprising and perplexingly relevant things to say about blue collar life and about life in middle America, despite the fact it's shot in Los Angeles, but it's set in sort of the St. Louis area kind of, or something. But this past week they did an episode about the employees kind of trying to figure out their healthcare situation. And it was just such a perceptive look at how anybody cures anything if they live on blue collar or minimum wage, money in America in 2017.
Yeah.
It was really good. And it's a show that people don't talk about all that much in terms of its quality, but it has a great ensemble. It's not as funny and it's not as brilliant as The Good Place. That's not, there's no competition, but on the other hand, as an hour comedy block, to go with our conversational theme of the conversation,
yeah,
it's another really good block of comedies that you can just settle in and go, okay, I'll laugh some, I'll be impressed with the creative leaps they take occasionally. 2 weeks ago there was a dead body in the wall, and everyone did all sorts of kind of Weekend at Bernie's weirdness with the dead body in the wall at the Superstore, and it was just strange and weird and funny. So it's a good show.
Okay, cool. I'll give it a shot for sure. All right, let's talk about some stuff that you've reviewed lately. Marvel's Runaways, the Marvel universe, continues to expand, and obviously, over the last weekend, dominate the box office with the Thor Ragnarok just making a ton of money. But by the way, have you seen Thor Ragnarok?
I have not seen it. Eventually, I will, probably just for Jeff Goldblum and Tessa Thompson. I think that would be what would get me out to see it. So,
both of them are great in it. And I'm not a fan of the Thor movies, the standalone Thor movies at all. I thought the first two were like really sort of dumpy and not very interesting. But hiring this director, and taking it in the direction that they take it in, You know, it's really profoundly funny and very, very silly, and not at all like the first two Thor movies. And it's more in the camp of the Guardians of the Galaxy tone. And
I will definitely see it at some point. The second Thor movie I thought was the very pit of Marvel's filmmaking thus far. And and it left such a bad taste in my mouth, involving a character who I was already hit in this on to begin with.
Yeah.
So.
Well, they take it in an entirely new direction. Very fresh, very funny. I mean, even Chris Hemsworth, when he's been doing the publicity for it, said that he was tired of where the character was going. And so they, you know, and I think, you know, bringing in Waititi was, I think, a stroke of genius, because Jeff Goldblum is allowed to just Jeff Goldblum it, you know, and that's always just fun to watch. But I really, really enjoyed it. And this is coming from someone who doesn't like the Thor movies at all. So,
that's encouraging to hear.
Yeah. All right. So Marvel Runaway. Let's talk about Runaways.
It is yet another Marvel based on a Marvel comic book series. This one was created by Brian K. Vaughan and Adrian Alfona. And it's, you know, frankly, yet another people discovering their powers, people discovering their significant place within the world show, which we also have on Fox and The Gifted, which I think is okay. I continue to watch The Gifted every week, and it only occasionally causes me annoyance or pain. So points for that. This is better than that. Basically, the story is a group of six high school students used to be friends, and they've kind of had a falling out because over the years they've all gone in their different directions. But they used to be friends because their parents were all part of what they thought was a charity organization called The Pride. And the kids get back together again while their parents are doing another of their Pride events. And the kids find themselves in a secret compartment, and they discover that maybe the Pride is not a charitable organization, but maybe some sort of dark group which maybe sacrifices teenagers. And so it's one of those, you know, kids always think that they're, you know, begin to distrust their parents or to distance themselves from their parents when they reach their teen years. But what would you do if you discovered that your parents were supervillains? That kind of thing. So it's a good concept. It really is. And the comic is a lot of fun. It's especially a lot of fun in the beginning. It kind of goes off the rails at a certain point, or at least it did for me. The series is created by Josh Schwartz and Stephanie Savage, and so there's definitely the OC with superpowers kind of vibe to it.
Okay.
You know, everyone's all very much affluent Los Angeles, and the kids are all at an exclusive prep school and all of that, and that's kind of the backdrop for the show. So the OC with superpowers is an enticing enough hook, I guess. And the show is surprisingly slow for a superhero show, because one of the big things that the creators have done that is not the case in the comics is that the parents are basically equal characters with the kids. In the comic, it's, I don't know, it's 80% the kids, 85%, and in the show, it's significantly closer to even, and that means you can have some familiar actors who people will know, James Marsters from Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Kip Pardue, who very briefly in the 90s was going to be a movie star, you know, the Sylvester Stallone driven. He was going to be a hot young movie star. Now he's playing someone, a teenager's father. So that's how this goes. Kevin Wiseman from Alias, Annie Wershing from a bunch of things. There's some familiar people there. And it because they introduce, I think, roughly 16 main characters in the opening couple episodes, it's slow because they're introducing a lot of characters.
Yeah.
Down the road, I think that may pay off because they're actually people you care about, maybe. But at least in the early going, it's not quite as much fun as it should be, but it has a lot of potential. I've seen 4 episodes. Hulu is premiering the first 3 altogether, the same way they did with Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so that's all premiering on November 21st. It has potential. I wish I loved it, but I think it could be good.
Okay. All right. And is it our episodes?
It is our episodes, and it's probably, I don't want to say it's kid friendly, but it's definitely teen friendly. It doesn't go too violent or too much swearing or too much sex or whatever. It's teen friendly, but not, say, 8 or 9 year old friendly.
Got it.
I'd say.
Okay, so that's Marvel's Runaways, and that's on Hulu. And you said November 21st that premieres, correct? The first three.
November 21st with the first three, and it's a 10-episode first season.
Okay, and when is it going to air? What day are they going to stream the next episodes?
I believe whatever the 21st is, the corresponding day.
It's a Tuesday. The 21st is a Tuesday, so okay. So
exactly.
It'll be,
then let's go with Tuesday.
Okay, that makes sense. All right, Dan, hang on. All right.
Sure.
All right, Dan Feinberg is with us, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. And he talks with us biweekly, and we talk everything TV. And we're going to continue that conversation after we take this break here on 720 WGN. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trip Tower. We're here till 5 a.m. Dan Feinberg, TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter, joins us. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N, and we're talking TV. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you.
I would like to talk a little bit about the Hollywood Reporter critics debate, and you were talking with Tim Goodman, your co-worker there, co-writer, about the fall's TV faves and fails. Give me a little, rundown on some of the, the fall's TV big ones and the failures and the big ones.
Well, there are a lot of things that that we talk about on the regular. That were one of the biggest disagreements that Tim and I, for example, had in that discussion was about Big Mouth on Netflix, which we talked about a couple of visits ago, I feel like.
Yes.
And
yes.
We both loved it. Tim hated it, but, that's his prerogative. Uh-huh. It's okay. But we did both agree that American Vandal, which you also loved, was definitely one of the big shows of the fall. We talked a little bit about Mindhunter, which was certainly one of the standouts, not necessarily, I don't know if it was necessarily I loved it as much as those other ones, but it's such a very different kind of show from American Vandal and Big Mouth.
Yeah.
You find those shows are not really all that much in common. Tim said very nice things about the new season of Mr. Robot. I have been, as always, mixed on it, though.
Yeah.
I've heard that the episode that aired last night is a lot of fun, and I need to watch it. I tend to watch episodes a few days later when I get the time, but I hear that the episode that aired on Wednesday night is kind of a takeoff on the rope Russian arc thing of doing everything, doing it all in one take.
Oh, okay.
but with sort of amusing mask cuts, I've heard, so I'll check that out. Interesting. We talked about sort of the disappointment of all of the fall network stuff, and we continue to be, we're into November now, and I still am watching 6 or 7 new shows, but I haven't set a series recording for a single one. Like every single one I set the recording for basically that night, almost in the hopes that at a certain point I'm just going to forget, and then when I forget, that'll be a sign.
Yeah.
So there are like 5 shows where if I forgot to record it one night, I would just be like, okay, well, that one's off my list. I think I did that with Law and Order, the Menendez murders. I think I did that after 6 episodes of that. I said, okay, this is just not doing it for me enough to keep going on a weekly basis. What else did we praise in that back and forth? I feel like there might have been a few other things we really liked, because we talked about how basically cable had saved the fall. We talked about Better Things as being one of the best things. We talked about Stranger Things also as being, that basically there's a ton of TV to watch. It just happens not to be new TV on network TV.
Yeah, that's right.
There's no lack of stuff to watch.
Yeah.
It's just not the new stuff.
What's been canceled? Have they announced shows, the new fall shows have been canceled? Now, is Me, Myself, and I, is that canceled or on hiatus?
It's no one wants to say anything is canceled. Nothing gets canceled anymore. Me, Myself, and I has been
pulled from the schedule as of, I think, next week or something, or maybe even as of last week.
Yeah.
It was replaced with Man with a Plan, so whatever. It's dead. They're not saying it's dead because no one says anything's canceled, but it's dead. What else is dead? The CW announced that Valor was only going to go 13 episodes, so again, it's not officially canceled, but it's dead.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's not many things. It's basically network TV ratings, for the most part, are so low that it's hard for anyone to commit to canceling anything because you never know when you're going to bring in something at mid-season that's going to do even worse. And suddenly the thing that looked awful in the fall ratings-wise looks almost respectable in comparison.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, Dan, hang on.
For sure.
All right, Dan Feinberg is with us, and we're talking TV. He's the TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can read him there, and you can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. All right, let's take a break for the news, and when we come back after the news, we'll talk more TV with Dan right here on 720 WGN. How's everybody doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio on the seventh floor of the Trib Tower. So Triple Play Thursday, get your requests in, one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. And we're going to be talking about TV shows that overstayed their welcome. I want to hear from you guys. What shows, maybe you even like them, but they were on forever and they should have been canceled sooner than they were. There's been a ton of those, and we'll talk a little bit about that as well. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. You can follow us on Facebook. Best way to stay connected is facebook.com/NickDShow. You can like us there. Dan Feinberg is a TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. He joins us every 2 weeks to talk about TV. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. Let's welcome Dan back. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you.
Hey, I watched The Rundown with Robin Thede, and I really like it. I think it's
so good.
It's really, really good, and I thank you for turning me on to it. Otherwise, I've never even heard of it.
I would love for people to watch that show because it is so sharp and so funny, and its jokes are jokes that aren't the same jokes that everyone else is making.
Yep.
And it's just so refreshing to have different punchlines because God only knows the things that are horrifying and funny, everyone's making fun of them, and they're making fun of them consistently in very, very similar ways, and it comes down to who does it with a funnier accent or who does it with more indignation and outrage, and she's making different punchlines from the other people, and I appreciate the heck out of it. There's a new show that I had set a DVR series pass for. As long as that show is on, I am going to be happy to laugh at Robin Thede.
Absolutely, I agree. By the way, it's on BET, and it's on Thursday nights on BET, and it's called The Rundown with Robin Thede, who was she was the head writer on Larry Wilmore's show, right?
Yeah, she was the head writer and frequently appeared on The Larry Wilmore Show, and she's done other various comic things, but this is her first full-on showcase, and she's really running with it.
I agree.
The show is amazingly assured very quickly.
Yeah, I think it's terrific. I really do, and I'm glad it's on my DVR. I can tell you that much. So, have you watched The Opposition?
I've watched it on and off. I've watched, like, the first three, and then I checked in the next week and I watched one, and then I said, okay, I'm going to give this show a chance to find itself, and then I'll check back in. So has it found itself?
No.
Oh.
No, I'm not a big fan. I haven't gotten through a whole episode yet.
I think it has things about it that are funny, and I think that it has conceptual things that are funny. It has, like, I just think that they don't exactly know who or what Jordan Klepper is.
Yeah.
And I think, for example, no one is fully aware that what he really and truly is he's Craig Kilborn. And I don't know that anyone has given that any consideration. And so what he's doing is he's doing this Alex Jones bit, but he's coming at it from this weird Craig Kilborn-y, frat boy, preppy guy in a nice, well-tailored suit thing, and it's not the same thing.
Yeah.
I just don't know that it works, the discordance between the thing that he's playing off of and the thing that he, by genetics, happens to be. And I don't know. I will definitely check in on it again because I really did like him on the Daily Show.
Yeah.
So I'd like for it to be a good show.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think The Daily Show is really strong. So this season, and handling, you know, all the political stuff. And I think Trevor Noah, and we've talked about this before, Dan, Trevor Noah, has improved as an interviewer so much. And I remember, you know, you saying this, and I kind of agree with you. The first two segments are great. Third segment, not so much. But that's not the case anymore. I think all three segments are good.
All three segments are good when he interviews certain kinds of people. I really think he is bad with actors, and yet they keep booking them. And
Kenneth Branagh was on last night.
Ooh, was he?
Yeah,
I totally missed that. How was that?
It was great, actually. It was very, very funny. Are you going to be able to? Are you going to watch it?
No, I will definitely watch it.
Okay, I don't want to give anything away, but the conversation is very, very fun. Obviously, he was there to promote Murder on the Orient Express, but it was a very funny interview, actually.
Okay, I can check that out. I can be interested, but yes, the first two segments are reliably just very, very good. And again, he does it every night, which you know, a lot of the shows that I think are probably better for the most part don't. You know, of the people who I think are on the same level, Seth does it every night.
Every night, otherwise,
John Oliver's fantastic, but he does it once a week.
Right.
Seth Methby's fantastic once a week. Jim Jeffries is very good once a week.
Right.
So
right.
I got to give him credit for doing it every night.
Yeah, I agree. And those are my two go-to nightly guys are Trevor Noah and Seth Meyers. In terms of, you know, the really strong, very funny, very smart political stuff, those are the two shows that I watch. Either in the morning when I get home from work or that night. So, speaking of late night shows, boy, was SNL bad last week. Wow. I mean, well, except for Heidi Gardner doing the girlfriend of the boxer bit, which I just had me on the floor laughing. That was the only really big highlight of the show. But boy, it was bad. And boy, all the
controversy.
Yeah,
Michael Che was good, and I think that Michael Che has been really good week to week on Weekend Update. And if they were smart, they would. I don't know. I don't know what they need to do. Colin Jost is doing something else. Like he's, you know, so he serves his purpose. He's still the guy that the various guests come and talk to, and still, you know, that and that's still what he does.
Yeah,
but Michael Che has actually been good this season.
I agree. I absolutely agree. Like really strong, really, you know, taking a stand and killing it. And that episode was terrible. I'm looking forward to this Saturday's episode because I love Tiffany Haddish. So
I hope they find a way to use her because they had absolutely no idea how to use Larry David, and Larry David used himself very poorly. I, for example, was not offended by the Holocaust jokes. As Holocaust jokes, I was offended that I was sitting there watching him trying out half-baked stand-up material in front of America.
It's funny because it totally reminded me of that episode. I felt the same way, Dan. I totally felt the same way. It was like, I'm not really offended by this. It's just not good. And he's bombing, like big-time bombing. But the thing about it reminded me of the episode of Seinfeld where Tim Watley converts so he can tell Jewish jokes. The episode where Tim Watley and Jerry goes to the priest to confess, and the priest he says I believe this guy converted so that he could tell Jewish jokes, and the priest said, well, this offends you as a Jew, and he says, no, it offends me as a comedian. And that's kind of how I felt. I'm not Jewish, but it's kind of how I felt. I can see people. No, I'm not offended because of these Jewish jokes. I'm offended because it's not funny.
I am Jewish, and I would be perfectly offended by things if I thought they were offensive. But the monologue, all I sat there thinking was, I can see how with slightly different punchlines that might have actually been offensive to me, but that it wasn't. It was just like, this is not something that he's tried out in a room, but why is he using this as the venue to be trying out his lame comedy? And it's worse when you compare it to something like Kumail Nanjiani's monologue, which was just great.
It was awesome. Yeah, it was true.
And it's such a tough thing. The here's basically 8 minutes from my stand-up version of the opening, and I think I prefer it to a lot of you know, the things that they do as rudimentary SNL openings. But it's just a tough thing to do, and some people do it well, and this happened to be a very bad one. It didn't offend me, but it was just not good. And then nothing else in the show with Larry David other than everybody dying laughing in the later sketch involving the person who I hear is based on a Real Housewives person.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, it was, but I'm looking, I watch it every week. And by the way, I'm one of the few people that really enjoyed the David S. Pumpkin special. I enjoyed it. And I thought what they did, I had to adjust what I thought it was going to be. I think that they did. They attempted to make like a real holiday special in the vein of the, you know, the Halloween specials, the animated Halloween specials for kids that are on every year. And I had to adjust that because it wasn't what I thought it was going to be. I think they were being sincere in wanting to do what was aimed at, I think, a young audience, except it was on at 10:30 on a Saturday night instead of 7 o'clock on a Tuesday.
I just don't know. I don't know if they were doing that or if they were doing a parody of unfunny holiday specials featuring characters who never should have been characters in half-hour specials. That to me was what it felt like more times was, what is the thing that we can imagine network notes telling us to do with the David S. Pumpkins character? And that's what it is.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, like basically dispersing every line of dialogue from the original sketch.
Right.
If you're happy, I'm happy.
Okay. All right. All right. Let's talk about, after a break coming up here, we're going to come back and I'm going to open up the phone lines and I'll bust out this list of TV shows that stayed on too long that should have been canceled sooner. Why don't you throw a few titles at us so we can kick off the conversation after the break?
Okay, one good one that is active right now is Modern Family, which is a show that when it came on was innovative and was often very smart and took advantage of a wonderful ensemble cast that it seemed to know how to use well. And, God, it's the worst comedy on ABC right now, and ABC has 10 comedies. ABC has all these great comedies, and they also have Modern Family, which is horrible.
How many seasons has Modern Family been on?
This is 9 or 10 at this point, and it's excruciating at this point. And yet I do keep watching it every single week, and very rarely do I even crack a smile at it. So there's one good one. And let's see. Then you're going to start getting into a lot of the obvious ones. How I Met Your Mother, I think everyone goes, oh, it went off the rails at a certain point. The question is where you think it went off the rails. I think it went off the rails after like season 4, which means there were 5 really bad seasons of that show. There are a lot of people, though, who think that it didn't go off the rails until later. But most people would tell you it went off the rails at some point.
Okay.
That's an obvious one. Dexter is sadly one of the most obvious because there's a show that went off the rails, somehow miraculously briefly got back on the rails, and then in its last season just went off into the field and, you know, left the rails miles behind Oprah. I mean, that's a show that ended at its absolute worst. But the weird thing about Dexter is that it went bad, that it went briefly good for, I think, about 2/3 of a season. It was like, ooh, Dexter's back, and then it went horrible.
Yeah.
So I would say those are 3 really easy, good examples for shows that were at one point, I would say, in all 3 of those examples were great or near great shows, and then by the end, all 3 of those shows. And Modern Family could never end. I mean, what do I know? It could run till we all die. But at a certain point, I'm gonna have to cut it off. I just don't know what it would take. But if I haven't done it yet, I don't know what to say about me.
Okay. All right. Is there any show that you want to, because we're going to break here, but is there any show that you want to recommend that everybody start watching if they're not watching it?
I would tell people, because this is one that we discussed months ago, we discussed it back in September when I reviewed it at the Toronto Film Festival, Alias Grace on Netflix has now premiered, and that's a show we talked about when it premiered at a film festival back in September. And it's now on Netflix. It's only 6 episodes.
they're not even long episodes because it was made for the Canadian Broadcasting Channel. So they're all 42 to 44 minutes. They're just regular TV drama episodes. You can zip through that, and it's really, really good. It's another Margaret Atwood adaptation, and it's terrific.
It's very Canadian, as you said. It's very Canadian.
It is David Cronenberg in a prominent supporting role.
That's right.
All you need to know.
All right. the next time that we're gonna talk is gonna be after Thanksgiving, Dan. I've got a couple of weeks off. So the next time we talk will be after Thanksgiving. So have a fine Thanksgiving, Dan.
Yes, you as well, and there will be plenty more TV premiering between now and then to talk about.
Yeah, and we'll talk all about it. Dan, always a pleasure, sir.
Till the next time.
See you. See you later. There's Dan Feinberg, everybody. He is TV critic for The Hollywood Reporter. You can follow him on Facebook and Twitter at The Fine Print, F-I-E-N. Interesting choices for Dan to talk about with shows that overstayed their welcome, shows that should have been canceled sooner. What do you guys think? 312-981-7200.